Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is someone who eats souls and consumes fear. It's Anande Boetus. Thanks for joining me.
That's a solid 8 out of 10. Solid 8 out of 10, Mark. Thanks.
You know, I had a 10 out of 10, and then I got nervous. And so, I have a question for you. So in this movie, the True Knot, Rose, all these people, they kind of consume fear. They kind of eat souls. Like, what's better, eating souls or consuming fear? Like, what's more sustenance?
Wow. I mean, eating souls, I guess. Like, yeah. I don't know. Consuming fear, I really don't know what you end up with there, I guess.
I was thinking about soul. That's like a big meal, right? That's like a one-timer, like a big steak. But maybe fear,
like
you can milk it.
I think it's more like, you know, like a python's diet, maybe, you know, like you only have to eat like every once in 6 months or something and you're good. You're set to go.
Well, that's a great visual, actually. When you said that, I saw it. That's interesting.
Well, I guess
that is kind of like these people. I mean, they've been, ravaging for millennia and just consuming people. And now they just drive around in RVs looking for people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love the way how they just like, they don't care at all. Like, and it's very funny for me though, because it's like this whole juxtaposition of they don't fear like consequences, but they actually do fear death a lot. You know, like that's actually like their whole thing. They want to live forever because they're so scared of dying and they just go around and do whatever they want. But like, it's just as fascinating. The True Knot is fascinating. I find them fascinating. It's also hard to really choose like the favorite. I mean, Rose is an obvious favorite character, but I would have loved actually seeing more of the other characters in the movie because just a fascinating bunch of people, really.
Yeah. In the, like, see, I don't really mind book adaptations. Like, some people don't like book adaptations because, like, it didn't stick close to the book. But, like, in the book, Dr. Sleep, the characters get a lot more screen time, but or book time or page time. I guess, obviously, because it's spread out of 800 pages. I have a random story for you. So I read this book in 2013, and my wife and I got married. We went on our honeymoon. We took a long flight, and our TVs didn't work. So we just read our books the entire time instead of watching movies. So I plowed through Dr. Sleep, which I don't think you should, in like a day. And when we were on the cruise one night, we left the little patio door that goes outside. I left it open. And I'm telling you, I woke up yelling one night because I thought I saw Rose the Hat like staring at me from my balcony. And I just woke up yelling in fear of this character. Like, I was like sweaty. I don't know. This, like, in the book, that character really got to me. And when I watched the movie, I thought Rebecca Ferguson was just perfectly cast. It's basically I saw in my head. And when she tells Jacob Tremblay, like, he's like, is this going to hurt? And she's like, yeah. Like, that's so, what a tough scene. But I almost laughed a little bit because it's just so mean.
Yeah, it's almost, you feel like afterwards you're like, wasn't that a bit over the top? But then no, not at all. You know, like, it was so brilliantly played. And also Jacob Tremblay, oh, wow. Just wow. That kid was amazing. And that scene, I read the other day, like, Rebecca was like, that was such a tough scene for everyone on set. Like, at the end of it, they were all crying, like, script supervisors, everyone on set was just crying. And Jacob got up and was like, cool, I'm ready for a Coca-Cola now. Like, the kid's fine and the adults are in pieces. It's just hilarious, really, because what a harrowing scene. I mean, like, it's one of those scenes where when you talk about the movie, it's like, oh, yeah, and then that scene, right? That scene.
Oh, God. Yeah, people keep, when I ask for questions on Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook, people just drop that scene in the way.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's an unforgettable scene because, like, I also read, like, Flanagan was like, they played with maybe, like, doing the scene off screen, but he said it was such an important thing to do, really, because that was, like, the moment that brought Abra and Dan into action and, like, really, you know, like, start looking at, okay, what are these people? Because this is not okay. We need to do something about it kind of vibes, you know? I think it was handled very, very well. But, oh, yeah, like, I've seen the movie 3 times now, and it doesn't get better watching that scene. Really doesn't.
I kind of thought about something, and this is a bad thought, but that kid was cheating. He was using his powers to hit every ball. So, like,
oh, yeah.
I know that's bad. I mean, what happened to him is horrible, but I'm like, wait a second. That kid was cheating. I don't know if that's a good or bad thought to have, but I mean, he should not have been demolished by the True Knot.
Look, if you have the ability, why not use it, I guess? Like, at least, he was using it in a team situation, at least. Like, not only for his own gain, I guess.
Whoa.
Yes, you can argue that.
Like, I guess if it was tennis or something, he'd be cheating. But since he plays on a team, they're benefiting from it.
Yeah, or like track or something.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I like that. I didn't even think about that. So now I like the kid a lot more. That's good. And also, I think it's important that they showed it. Because don't you hate it in movies when, like, oh, that person is so bad. Oh, if they get a hold, when I get a hold of you, it's going to hurt. But in this one, you see what happens when they get a hold of a child. The stabbing, the hurt, the pain. So later, when Abra, when you know she's being hunted, you know what happened to Baseball Kid. So it just makes it, it's like a tough scene, but for the viewer, you know. They showed, they didn't tell. And I think that's what makes it even, like, then you really worry about Abra, because you saw what happened to that kid.
Definitely, and because it's about the torture, you know? It's not like they just killed the kid. It's about they torture the kids. So in the movie, they keep on saying, you know, like, when Dick talks to Dan as well and tells Dan, you gotta help her, because they're gonna torture, you know? Like, it's not gonna be, like, sweet, quick, they're over, done, you're dead now. Like, I mean, that's horrible too. Don't get me wrong. Jeez. Tricky talking about this movie, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the torture just makes it so much, like, worse, you know? Like that complete suffering that the kids go through with these people that suck the living life out of them.
No thanks.
Oh, very interesting thing. I actually read that they had such a hard time with the steam, right? So because apparently when there were too little of the steam, it looked like everyone was just cold. But when it was too much, Flanagan was like, when it was too much, it looked like everyone was vaping. So he said they actually spent an insane amount of time getting the steam right, which I thought was so funny with the whole vaping thing. Like, yeah, look at them, the true nod, vaping away.
Yeah, you definitely don't want it tied with that. Like, imagine being in a theater and they leave it in there and you're like, are they vaping? Like, that's the question you don't want to ask while watching that.
And that would have been very distracting.
I love what they said, too, in this scene where they go up to Baseball Kid. He said the actors were all shrugging. They thought they were just hot stuff. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to go terrorize this kid. And then the reactions, like you said, they were just crying and in fear. And Flanagan's like, thanks, guys, I can't use any of that.
I mean, like, personally, the thing is, you think about it and, like, yeah, Rebecca was like, you know, I'm acting, it's whatever. And that our immediate reactions too, it's like, yeah, it's just acting, I'll be able to do it. But then hearing how everyone was traumatized and then seeing how good Jacob did it was just like, yeah, I don't think I would ever want to do a scene like that, actually, because, you know, I think it's something that stays with you for a very, very long time.
Yeah, for sure. And that kid, oh, they brought in just the perfect kid. And he worked with Flanagan before on Before I Wait. So that probably helped out Flanagan getting him back. Like, there's probably trust there.
Absolutely. But I mean, Flanagan's, yeah, can we just geek out over Mike Flanagan, please? The biggest fan. Oh, like the only film I haven't seen yet is Absentia, just because I can't get my hands on it here in South Africa. Like, I'm having a really hard time. So yeah, if anyone's listening, send me Absentia. But I love his films and I love his casting in general. Like, he casts such, like, great actors, but they're also normal, if I can use that word. Like, they're very real.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, you know, they're real, and I think that's how they can so easily bring out the humanity in his characters, because his characters have a lot of realness and humanity to them, and I just love it. Like, his stuff's so character-driven, and it works. It just works.
Like, we've been, like, it's kind of cool seeing him blow up, because I loved Oculus. I thought the mood they created in that, and then Hush, which we talked about on the podcast in 2016, just, like, raving about it. He likes a lot of housework. He'll do Oculus, which is inside a house mostly.
Right.
Hush is inside that house. Gerald's Game is inside that room. The Haunting of Hill House, that's easy to explain. I guess they go to the Overlook on this, but it's kind of nice to see him successfully branch out to much bigger budgeted stuff. And I mean,
absolutely.
He nailed it.
Absolutely.
But I don't know how he does it. Like, the tone, right? Like, what's, like, Oculus, right? It sort of, it builds, like, almost an oppressive tone, would you say? Like, it's a weird feeling watching a couple of his movies. Like, this, the mood he can capture. And like, Gerald's Game, imagine working on that film set, because you're just in a room mostly. So you got to make that look visually interesting for 80 minutes. Like, that's a nightmare as a filmmaker, and he pulls it off. You don't even notice.
Yeah, I read, everyone was like, I haven't read Gerald's Game, but everyone was like, this is impossible to film. Like, it's the book that's just impossible to film. And I mean, I watched Gerald's Game and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. So the fact that he can do all these things just shows he's got a very good understanding of how to put horror onto a screen. And especially like if we talk about King's stuff, because it's so nice to kind of compare it to the books and everything. He really gets that feeling, that dread the whole time, but it's so story driven and character driven. Like the story has been driven by the characters. He nails it. Like he's really very good. I think, yeah. Does he also suck souls? Like what's happening?
Yeah, he's doing something squirrely out there.
What's his secret?
That's
question.
I wish I could. Imagine if we asked him, what's your secret? Like, how do you? It's a
yeah.
Because you know what? Did you watch any of the behind the scenes videos for this? Like, there's some on YouTube and kind of floating around. And
I did. I watched a couple. Yeah.
And he's like, they shot in Atlanta, which is where I live. And I used to work in the film industry. And I wish I would have stayed around the industry long enough to work on this, because they like recreated the hotel, the lobby, the hallways. But when he's doing it, he's wearing shirts from The Shining. He's wearing a Shining shirt. He's wearing like the Apollo shirt. So he seems just like
a
big nerd.
He's such a fan.
Yeah.
Absolutely is. Like I read that after he did Gerald's Game. Stephen King emailed him to tell him congratulations, and he loved it. And he printed out the email and framed it and hung it on his wall. Like, he's just a big fanboy, and I love that. I just love that. He's very, like, he feels like a very down-to-earth type of person. And to have someone like that in the horror genre in general, I think for a lot of us horror fans, you know, we really appreciate him, because the things that he's doing is just so... Like, I love the fact that he's not just out to get jump scares or just like gore for the sake of gore. I mean, that's something that like a lot of us appreciate, you know, and it's the themes in his movies. It's very like real, and it's stuff that, yeah, we should maybe, you know, have more in movies. We should talk about it more. Like, I just love that. He feels like a breath of fresh air, really. And everything he does is like, he just gets better and better.
And he was smashing hands. I don't know if you've noticed that in his movies.
This is what I wanted to... remember I told
Gerald's
you
game.
I have a question about the hand. What is it with him and, like, mutilated hands? I mean, what is that?
What's your favorite of his... I got to go with Gerald's Game, just because of the...
Oh,
how much hush, emphasis...
Hush.
Is, oh, Hush? That's your favorite? When did you get smashed?
Oh, because I did not see that coming at all. And I was like, this woman has been through everything, and now you're doing this to her hand too? Why? And I mean, because that was kind of a turning point for her as well, when he smashed her hand. Like, after that, she was like, well, okay, asshole, let's dance. I loved it.
And the mask came off so early in Hush, and that made me really happy too. Like, it's just... Because, all right, I don't know how you feel about... I love Strangers Pray at Night, but the Strangers, I don't like. Because I don't like those three. I think they're pretentious, and they're not scary.
Yeah.
And I think they're just sort of... I don't know. I don't like them. Like, they feel too stylish for me. So by him taking off the mask, it just made it more real and appealed to me more on that level, which I did.
Absolutely. And I think, like, because, yeah, I agree with you. I didn't feel anything for them. Where in Hush, yeah, take off the mask... Whoa, now I'm feeling stuff. Now my brain's going. Now I'm engaged. Who is this guy? Like, he was way more creepier without the mask. Great mask, but yeah, I think we've done a lot of masks now, you know? I think we know the mask thing by now. So I loved it when that mask came off, because yeah, it's something that you don't expect. And I think it worked just beautifully. But yeah, the mutilated hand thing, I mean, Flanagan, if you ever listen to this, please address your obsession, apparently, with mutilated hands.
So we have two questions now that we can come up with. Like, wait, how do you do it, and what's up with the hands? I guess we can do that.
Yeah.
Come up with five. We got a cracked article.
Absolutely. And we can start it with, Dear Mike Flanagan.
And I got to tell you, like, the job that he did on this Dr. Sleep, I don't envy him. So do you like The Shining, Kubrick Shining? Are you a fan of that movie?
Listen, I like it. I think it's a good movie, but I won't say I'm a fan. It was very cold for me, like, in a way. I think it's got its merits. I think there's a lot of stuff that were very well done. I also think for the time that it came out, you know, Kubrick and everything. But yeah, I'm not that big of a fan.
Got it. Because he had to, like... Right? He couldn't just do the Dr. Sleep book, because in that one, the Overlook Hotel's burnt down. Most of these people are killed by measles, the true knot. They get a sick, what, steam, I guess, vape. They vape.
Yeah.
They
eat someone and then,
And they all start dying, and then they go back and just all that. Then you learn that Abra is like the niece of Danny, and it's kind of longer. But this one, he had to like combine The Shining and Dr. Sleep. So he had to keep the Overlook open, and then he had to combine both and make both fans happy, and he succeeded, I think. I think fans of Stephen King loved it. I mean, Stephen King can't stop gushing about it. And then people who liked the original Shining, I think, got all the beats, like the music, the heartbeat score, the hotel, the same ghosts. Like, so I think he hit all the bases on this. But that's got to be a sleepless year writing a script, just trying to figure out a way to balance it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I want to know, what is this guy like eating or consuming? Because it's, wow, it's just, I mean, I was very surprised, because I only watched the movie, in February this year? I couldn't watch it in the theaters last year for multiple reasons that I won't bore you with, but I actually felt very bad about it after I heard about it bombing at the box office. I was very mad at myself then, but anyway, so yeah, when I watched it, I've read that, oh wow, he married the two, the three basically, because it's Kubrick's version, King's version, and then his own. I love it that he still put his own mark on, onto it. Like, it was just beautifully done. I loved how he pulled everything together and made it his own, but also honoring everything. And because I think, with something as legendary as The Shining, you can't just discard the fans. That would be arrogant in a way. But it's a fine line, because you can't just, we've seen this with pop culture in general, you can't just please the fans all the time, you know? I actually, for instance, talking about, the differences between the book and the film, I had no problem with him keeping the whole, they're connected, there's a bloodline thing out of it. Because honestly, I think that would have felt way more too Star Warsy at this point anyways. So I'm actually glad you just kept that out, because it doesn't matter. Mm-mm. It doesn't matter.
And, a lot was asked of Kylie Curran as Aberstone. This is one of her first movies, and I wouldn't have guessed that. I loved her performance in this movie, and I kind of, when she walked through Rebecca Ferguson's, force projection or something, she just walked right through her. That made me so happy. And that's a tough role for a kid, I would say, but she pulled it off wonderfully. I dug it. I dug what she did in this film, and I liked her with Ewan McGregor a lot.
Absolutely. I think she fitted into she was great opposite Rebecca. She was great with Ewan. She really owned it. And she did it so naturally, which I love too. I really believed, ooh, this girl is a shiner.
the opening scene. Oh, you know what is one of my favorite scenes in this movie is when, in the beginning, when she does her abracadabra and she has the spoons hanging up to the ceiling. And then she kind of says something and then all the spoons fall. But that little shimmy that Rebecca Ferguson does when she feels the thing, it's just so it's so, it's a shimmy, right?
It's a little shimmy. It's a little with her back. I love it because she's acting with her back there. Yeah. This little back shimmy. I'm like, ooh.
I should write an article about that. Back acting.
Back acting, yes. No, very important.
I think John Travolta,
if you want to be taken seriously.
John Travolta's good in Saturday Night Fever, the way he walks and moves around. There's some good back acting there.
But listen, the way Rebecca moves in general, mean, honestly, there where she, in the end at the Overlook Hotel, when she goes up the stairs, the movement in general was great, great in that movie. She's just fantastic.
She said she had a movement coach on this one.
Mm.
And so the movement coach that she had actually walked her through a lot of the, I guess to move around them, they wanted her to be insect-like. To get all the stuff out of her. So she said that she adored the woman who did that. And you're right. Watching that staircase scene, I didn't even think about it. But in the original, it's Jack, Shelley Winters is walking back with the baseball bat, afraid of Jack. And in this one, it's Dan afraid of Rose. And I liked her menace in that. But I also think it's true. Like, their hubris got them killed. I think they're just so used to being all powerful, and they kind of got played in that. And I like it. I think that's the way you defeat these people, is by them just not. They're used to people being afraid. I don't think they're used to people being on the offensive against them. And that's kind of something I liked, how they fell apart when they were being attacked. I dug it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think also, because when you're in power for so long, you know, you kind of forget that. You become arrogant. You don't realize that it's a weakness, really. So then the moment, oh, listen, not going to take your shit, then, you know, like.
And you're like, what? I'm not used to this.
Exactly. It's like, you know, when people are like, oh, I'm not afraid. Yeah, you are. Just wait for it. You will be exposed. And I kind of loved, like, the whole thing with Dan, you know, having this fear. And then at the end of it, like, coming to terms with, you know, like, it's a movie about life and death and mortality and loss. And it's all these themes just... Again, like, Flanagan just weaved it all together so beautifully, and still honoring Kubrick and still honoring King. I mean, we can go on and, you know, like, we all know this, but I just love how Flanagan puts his mark on it, because, yeah, like, Hill House, all the stuff that he does, it's just, yes, like, it's stuff that you can't stop thinking about, really. There's
That's
always
a good
something
point.
That you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, that actually makes you think of, you know, it makes your mind, And that's what I love about him, because he doesn't make us passive viewers, you know? Mm-hmm. We're always engaged. He engages us, which, yeah, I mean, that is something I respect from filmmakers in general. Engage me. Don't treat me like I'm a dumbass, you know? I can't stand that, honestly.
Yeah, he never, like, you're right. And you know what's weird is you and I probably, we absorb a lot of media and TV and movies. And I forget about most of the stuff I watch. But when I think about Oculus... Just, you know, I remember the opening scene of Karen Gillan walking and, like, her ponytail going back and forth. And then at the end, in front of the mirror, and at Hush, like, the first view of the killer in Gerald's Game, I have that I don't know what that guy was, but, like, him looking at her, like, that.
Oh, yeah.
Some of his things, and, like, Rose the Hat and this, they're kind of burned in my memory. And that's rare for me with movies. I say it's probably every 1 in 20 that I watch actually, like, think about. A lot, because I just got to move on to the next thing. So, yeah, he does that. He does that really well.
He does that. But I think it's because he's so good into, like, he really climbs into the emotional pits of, you know, being a human. Like, he gets stuff. He really gets it. Like, I think that's maybe the thing that impresses me the most about him, is he gets, like, human existence and what it means to be a human, with our fears and our horribleness and our wanting to be good and our being sucky and everything, you know, like the whole range, the deep range that, yeah, nobody really likes to talk about, I guess.
So we had a question in here. So Amanda Scoggins asked on Facebook, she's like, I would like to know why they went so much darker and less hopeful in the film than the book did with some of the character death choices. And then they wrote, I guess, like Kubrick did with The Shining as well. So in the book, Danny lives, and he goes back to being Dr. Sleep. Oh, what a great scene, when his first Dr. Sleep scene with the cat, right? That guy. Isn't that guy so good?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that actor. What a nice scene. Well, it's not, he's dying, but he's like, hey, Doc. Oh, man. All right. But I guess this movie, I think, kind of tie, like, so I think it sort of ties it together. Like, so he was helped by, Dick Halloran, and then Dick Halloran died. And then so he kind of does that for her. Like, he kind of passes on and sacrifices himself for her. So I guess it's a darker ending, but I don't know. Did this movie need to end with Danny dying? I think it's not bad. Like, he passes it on to her. She's the one who gets to look out for people now. And she's stronger than he was. So I think he set her up right. Like, you know, that wasn't done for him. She teaches her to embrace her power. So I think that's a stronger ending, maybe, than keeping him alive. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think in the context of Dr. Sleep, I don't think it's so grim. Look, I mean, yeah, if he didn't die, it would probably still be fine. But I also like that thing of passing it along. And also, I think, again, like, for Danny, you know, he went through all this trauma, and his whole life he struggled with it. And he was afraid of death and afraid of, like, you know, like, going there again and all these, like, difficult stuff that he needed to deal with all these ghosts haunting him and everything. And, you know, like, finding her Like, I think she taught him, well, even before that, because, yeah, when he's an orderly and everything, like, he learns empathy again. Because I think this movie is a lot, like, plays a lot on empathy as well. And, you know, I think that's more of the thing where, yeah, he sacrifices himself, but he's being brave by doing that. Like, he's being braver than Rose or any other true knots ever could have been, you know? So, yeah, I didn't think it was that grim. It was sad. Look, Billy's death was sad for me.
Oh,
I mean,
I hated that
poor guy. I mean, now that was a death that I could have done without, honestly. Like, that was horrible.
But wasn't that the, like, because he's such a good dude. He takes Dan in. He gets him a job. That, like, takes exactly care of him. Then he goes with him to go find the baseball boy body. But I did kind of like Snakebite Andy's laugh as she was dying. Like, it's so evil. Like, it's just such,
yeah.
It's like, she's like, I hate men. And she was going to kill him, and then she just gets that one last off. And, ugh. I guess is cool, but I love Billy. He's such a good dude.
Billy was the best. I really, when that happened, no. No. Let's reverse. Let's change that.
Director's cut. Now, I do think he says the best use, like, he has the best usage of bonkers I've heard in years when he's talking to Danny. They're going to go dig up baseball boy with Abra leading him. He's like, if you're wrong about this, you're crazy. Like, you're nuts. And I can deal with that. But if you're right, like, bonkers. Like, that's,
bonkers.
I could listen to Cliff Curtis say bonkers. That word needs to be used in more movies, I think.
I think so too.
But I thought, like, he went with them and told the hunting story, and then that hunting story ties in with them shooting them later. So, like, it's all kind of connected. There's not much, you know, this is a 2.5 hour movie, but it doesn't feel like do you think it feels like a 2.5 hour movie to you?
No. Honestly, even the director's cut, I was like, more Dr. Sleep, yay. Like, yeah. it's so easy to watch. I mean, I read other people, you know, didn't care for how long it was, but I had no problem with it. It's fun. And that's actually saying a lot, because in general, I don't like movies that are longer than 2 hours. So, but yeah, this was something else. I could have 4 hours of this. Mike Flanagan, we can have 4 hours of Dr. Sleep. Thanks. Director's cut, take two.
Yeah, the producer's director's cut. Maybe we can invent that. So
there we go.
That answers the question. Johnny Numb, one of my, he's on this pod a lot, and he's like a great horror, he writes a lot about horror movies, really great writer. He asked, which version do you prefer, a theatrical or director's? And I just want the director's. I want 4 hours of this. Like, give me more.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I don't care. Like, the theatrical cut was great too. It wasn't like so much worse for me than the director's cut. Like, a lot of people were like, oh, the director's cut is so much better. I was like, well, I felt what I needed to felt with the theatrical cut as well. So, but the thing of having more Dr. Sleep, yes, I'll always take that. Thank you very much.
Give me more souls and give me more fear. I'll take that.
You know, yeah, and give me more, just, yeah, and the dialogue is so good between everything, because, I mean, I think it's such an interesting, like, story, really, because you've got The Shine, and I think it can very easily come off as corny, almost. Mm-hmm. Like,
The
Shine. I can't think of a better word.
Yeah.
The Shine. Ooh, you got The Shine. But, I mean, I think that's also because I've seen a lot of people ask, okay, but what exactly is The Shine? And then people are like, oh no, it's like telepathy and clairvoyance and what. But I think it's so much more than that, because if you think about the movie, you know, it's just about the awareness, really, the ability to be aware of people around you and how they're doing and what they're feeling. Like how Billy tells Danny, he can just feel when someone's in need of help. You know, when Danny asks him, how did he know about me? And Billy was like, well, you know, I can just, and Billy wasn't even like he had The Shine or anything, but because Dan also says some people don't even know that they have it, you know, but it's like that ability to know if someone's off or if someone's not doing okay. Like, I think it's, if you want to, like, bring it back to the real world, like, what's The Shine? It's very much just about having awareness, you know? And I mean, that also ties in for me with empathy, because I don't think you can have empathy if you don't have awareness. What do you,
No, you're nailing it. In my head, I'm thinking about how much deeper you went with this movie. I'm thinking about the word bonkers and stuff like that. And you're dropping some truth bombs on me. And I love this, because it's true. I mean, it's just the awareness, right? Some people have it. Some people don't use it. Sometimes you know a lucky number, or you can stop at this place. But I think it's just reading people, knowing people. Wow.
Exactly. That feeling that you get when you meet someone and you're like, I like this person. This is a good egg. Or, oh no, why is this person giving me the creeps? I don't even know them. You know, like that, that sort of stuff. It's a very acute sense of awareness, really, that some people have and some people don't. And I think that's the shine.
And then you can kind of maybe become like a predator with it too. You could use
that's
that.
That's a thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. What you do with it, you can manipulate people and gain your, you know, everything for yourself and whatever it is that you want. Think you can live forever, be invincible. I mean, like we know of people in the world like that. So, you know, like,
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's that. And the responsibility of, and I think that's where the whole consequences of, you know, how the true not, they don't fear consequences. That's how they can just like do what they do to kids. Mm-hmm. But a fear of consequence, I think, is a good thing in a way, because that's what helps us to overcome addiction, you know, and all of that. So I think that also ties into the movie, you know?
Wow. Man.
Yeah, sorry. This is like,
I love
honestly,
this.
This movie
it.
Is very close to home for me, because I had a traumatic childhood. I can relate to Danny a lot. So, like, yeah, I'm going to come with the deep stuff. But we'll also keep it light and say bonkers at least every 5 minutes, at least.
I feel the same way about the movie Take Shelter. Like, I would get very philosophical about that movie. That movie, like, hits me. Just thinking about it, like, really gets me. So,
yeah.
I know, I guess I don't know how you feel, but I kind of know, like, looking into the characters and the shots and explaining the motivations. I definitely know where you're going with that.
Yeah. And I think that's to also go back to a previous question that, like, when you asked me how do I feel about The Shining, I think with The Shining, I didn't really connect with it that much. And yet it was also very close to home for me. Like, my dad, yeah, he wasn't like, you know, he struggled and we had a lot of shit with that. And, but like, with this one, I felt, and maybe because it's from Danny's point of view, you know, being the kid that had to go through that childhood trauma and dealing with it. I mean, that whole thing when he gets his 8-year coin and he talks about sobriety and he talks about his dad, like, it was so accurate, Mark. I can't tell you.
Wow.
Like, extremely accurate. Like, that is how it is. You feel like you want to run away from, but you also want to run towards, because, like, you know, it's how Dick says, we all have a bit of light and a bit of dark, you know, like, even Jack Torrance had a bit of light in him, even that we didn't really get to see much of it. It was mm-hmm. there, but it's like this whole process that you have to go through. And but I loved, like, the end of the speech where Danny ended it saying that, you know, his sobriety was for his dad, and that he kind of did it for the both of them because Jack Torrance never could do it. Oh, so dude, good. So accurate. So accurate.
I thought at first his performance maybe was a little, what was I trying to think? Like, understated? Like, I didn't know if he, but then I guess I watched it again and I picked up a lot of those notes a lot more. I really liked that. I found more nuance, which obviously you do the more times you watch things, but I found a lot more nuance. Like, the way he's I call it The Shining. Like, that could sound goofy in another actor's words, but the way he said it, like, I think Ewan, I mean, he's been acting forever, but he got this character, and I think he was able to really kind of deliver the earnestness of it, I guess, and the helplessness.
Oh, yes.
And I dug that.
Yes.
I don't know.
No, he played Danny with such humility, and I think that is what was really the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he played him down as well. Like, you could see the little boy in him, really. And I think that is, like, you know, like, that what makes his story so sad. But then to see him grow throughout the film, it's just so beautiful. That's why I don't think the ending is really grim. I think he was, like, at the end, he was at peace with it. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most important thing you can hope for. Like, how would you like to end your life? At peace. That would be great. You know?
And, wait, I had something good. I forgot. Because, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, he ended up really happily. And at the end, she was able to say, Abra was able to say that her dad was at peace. So I really appreciated that. Like, it was a neat scene between her at the end where she finally started using her powers. And you know what's interesting? Her mom didn't really like when Abra used her powers, but she would lead her leading questions to get her to use her powers. Did you notice that?
Yeah, that was interesting. Like, something in the director's cut that was also, like, there were more of that in there because... Yeah, I mean, that whole thing also about kids kind of suppressing, you know, their abilities or their stuff whenever, like, you know, an adult would look weird at them and they're like, okay, no, I shouldn't do this because obviously they don't like that. And I so felt for her, you know, that her parents were like struggling to deal with it and she couldn't just be open and honest with them. And, but yeah, I found it interesting that, okay, so mom doesn't want to deal with it, but oh, when someone's apparently sick, then she wants to know, oh, is she going to make it? Is she going to live? Then, mm-hmm. then it's fine. Then Abra can use her powers. And I'm like, yeah, doesn't really work like that, mom. You can't just like whenever it suits you, you know?
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought that was a little squirrely, like just kind of but I like that. I think parents would do that. Like, I don't want to believe it, but yeah. If it can help me win the lotto, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's very real. Again, what makes it so good, the way Flanagan does it, it's, you can always like, in some way or another, you can bring it back to the real world. And it's like, yep, that's how that'll play out.
And Danny, like he didn't, so he was telling her not to use his powers, but I don't think it was coming to a place of you can't do it. It was just coming from his experiences with his dad, with kind of like his growing up, with his alcoholism, with his like, you know, the history of growing up, the way his mom would look at him. So I don't think he saw it as you can't do it. I just think that's the way he lived. And that was like what got him. Does that make sense? So I don't think he was telling her you can't do it. But I think it was more of like once he figured that out, he's like, oh, shoot, I was wrong. But I kind of liked how he came to that conclusion at the end. And it wasn't from like hubris. It was just from his life experiences.
Absolutely. He was just like basically projecting his own fears and his own like struggles with, you know, controlling it and everything onto her, really. I think it was more just projection, I think.
All right. So, hey, quick, let's do something real quick. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more. I already forgot the name of this movie. That's how much I've been getting into this. we'll talk more Bonkers. Dr. Sleep. Bonkers.
We'll talk more Bonkers.
Bonkers Dr. Sleep. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I never mentioned this in the beginning, but I just want to say thank you for writing that article that I loved on Cracked about people who did, let's see, I'm pulling it up right now because I thought this was a great idea. 6 insanely complex pop culture mysteries solved by fans. And you included my It Follows data on this. And then because of that, I was like, well, this is fun. Like you included my data and like Adam Weir's included, like wrote about one of my like random data pieces before that. So then that gave me like the guts to talk to the people at Cracked, and then they let me start writing for them, which was really cool because I loved the podcast back in the day. So I just want to say thank you for writing that article to get me going with Cracked.
You're welcome. No, that's actually so cool. Like, I loved it when I saw your name starting to pop up in the column section because, yeah, when I did research on that article, I stumbled upon your website where you did all your wacky data stuff. I love it. What's it called again?
It's the data. Oh, I just call it Dumb Data. And it's like movies, films,
dumb
and flicks.
Dumb Data. I love it. Dumb Data. It sounds so like, nah, Dumb Data, but it's awesome data. Like, I found that It Follows, but I stayed for a while on your site looking around. And when I actually pitched, like, the research stuff, I actually had a little note there for the editors. Listen, check out this guy because his stuff's really pretty cool, and you've referenced us before. Mm-hmm. So I, like, made a little note, like, everyone go check out Mark because he's pretty cool. So, yeah, it was awesome when I saw your name pop up. And it's like, yes.
Yeah, that was, you know, I call
one
it,
of us.
Well, I call it dumb data just because, all right, so maybe I'm a little defensive about it because it's silly. But a lot of people on the internet are just so, like, this is dumb. So I think I got defensive and I'm like, you know, it's just, so basically I tell people I just want them to chuckle. Like, my stuff won't change any lives, but it'll just get people laughing about, you know, whatever it is. So I started calling it like dumb data to like head people off at the past. And maybe it's a little self-conscious, but and also when people call it dumb data now, I'm like, it's what I call it. Like, so I guess it's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but I guess it's a defensive thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I call it dumb data.
You did a lot of work. No, I think it fits. I actually think it's perfect. It's such a internet name for a site anyways. No, I think it's good. I think you're good with that. And it's a great site. And you do great work. It's very fun. You just, like, it's a lot of data and stuff, but the way you write it for the readers, I think it's great. Everyone should go check out Dumb Data.
I wasn't fishing there, but I appreciate the ad.
And read more cracked.
Yeah, and, like, look for your stuff. So, I mean, you know what, in the post for this, like, I write one for each. I'll just include the links to your work with Bunny Ears and Cracked, and then I'll include your, like, Twitter, so if people can come check you out. That was good. You know, it follows producers. They asked me not to say who, but they reached out to me and said my data was, like, almost exactly right, which made me so happy. They're like, you nailed it. That's weird. I'm like, why? What's up?
Did they email you?
Yeah, they, like, reached out to me. Well, one reached out to me on email, and the other one sent me a message on Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I got the message, and I was like, oh, from two separate ones. And they're like, yeah, like, I don't know how you did it, but, like, that was, you kind of nailed it. Like, you basically figured out the timeline of the movie. And so that made me really happy. Because I figured there was no right, you know what I love about Dumb Data? There's no right answer to it. So as long as my math checks out, it makes sense.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool, though. Like, I think you should print out that email and frame it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Actually, this sounds bad. Like, you know how Flanagan did the Stephen King framing? I got interviewed by Wired because of my data. And so I, like, got profiled by them. So my wife went and got me, like, a custom frame of the interview in there.
But I love it. That's so cool. I mean, that's so cool.
Like, not everyone. Like, I just want to get my deep love of Deep Blue Sea out there. And you love Deep Blue Sea.
Man, I mean, that's the one thing. Look, I think we have a lot of things in common of, like, pop culture that we love. But yes, can we just please tell the audience that we might be the biggest Deep Blue Sea fans ever?
No, I think we are. I'm trying to start. I think I'm doing another Deep Blue Sea series. I think we're gonna do, like, we're gonna talk about each kill in the movie. I don't think I'm gonna just talk about all the kills in that movie, because I was working in a theater in 99 when it came out, and I just remember audiences going insane for it, the death of Samuel Jackson, and I just love sharks in general. So it's just, it's like the perfect, and, you know, I want to get rid of, like, maybe we can work on this, is just getting rid of the myth that it's so bad, it's good. Like, it's so good, it's good. Like, it's not, like.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I think people are very nitpicking there. Like, I don't know what they really expect from the movie. No, I think it's a lot of fun, and it's well done. It really is. Let's do a whole series on this. I'll come back on the pod and we can talk about Deep Blue Sea, because I think, we need to, like, just re-educate everyone about one of the greatest shark movies. I know you're a big Jaws fan. For me personally, it's the best shark movie ever, but yeah.
Let's do it. I need to do one every year, like, get a Deep Blue Sea episode out on the podcast every year, just to kind of keep it fresh. So next time we'll bring you on for Deep Blue Sea. We'll just talk about how much we love it.
Yes, sharks.
It's just that, and then that one scene, and then that scene, and then, oh,
and then
what about that one
scene? Yeah, and the other scene. Remember that other scene?
And that reminds me
of
that.
But you know
other
what?
Scene. Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel about Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, you know, the scene, and then that scene, and then, oh, that scene. It's just, it's one of those movies. It really is.
I do have a question for you, and I know you have some questions, so we'll make sure we'll get those out. But, like, also Nicholas asked us on Facebook, he's like, why the goofy hat? So Rose the Hat, right, she's just an absolute badass. She's hundreds of years old. She is just the boss. White people's out. She can, like, fly and travel and meditate, and, you know, she, like, eats steam, this immortal. She can live forever. But when do you think the moniker happened? Like, because, you know, have you seen Spider-Man Homecoming? This is really random.
Yes.
But remember when Ned's wearing the hat? And then everyone's like, nice hat, Ned. He's like, yeah, it gives me confidence. Do you think that was, like, her when, like, so her character came over from Ireland? Do you think that was early Rose before she was Rose the Hat? Do you think she put the hat on? And then people, hey, Rose the hat, like the hat. Like, how do you think she became Rose the Hat? Because there's really no data on it or research on it.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, for how long has she had it? Because you kind of, I mean, that's a very interesting question. I haven't thought about that at all. A weird one as well.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, my first reaction is, well, it was probably a significant kill or something, and like she took the hat.
Oh.
Or maybe she literally just killed someone for the hat. I mean, if it's a good hat, you know, like probably just kill them for the hat. I don't know.
That's a wow.
It's an old hat. You can see it's old. Like, it's very worn. It's definitely an old one.
You're giving me some good answers here. Like, I come up on these riffs, and then you give me, like, that's a shit. I think that's about right. Cause,
you think? Well, I don't know.
Does she seem like someone who needs a gimmick?
That's
like,
the thing. No, I don't think so at all. And, I mean, if you look at her hair, she's got these beautiful little, like, braided stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she doesn't need a hat, really. She's got lush hair. I mean, you know, I think, like, the hat is like a crown, obviously.
Oh.
But, yeah, I think it comes... I think that it was, a significant kill or something. Or maybe someone she loved died, and then she took the hat or something. So, I don't know.
Do you think she's attached to it as, like, Indiana Jones is to his? Like, obviously, right? She would not.
No, her hat is her everything, definitely. Like, it's her crown.
In the book, she had to burn... They burned it, because Abra said it had black magic on it, but they don't say anything about it here. But the crown, that's another good one. Jesus, that's kind of her. It's a big old hat. And then, you know, they found a hat, but then they had to resize it. Like, they had to recreate it. So they found this, like, 100-year-old hat, the costume designer, and then he went and then sized it for Rebecca. Like, they made it custom. I hope she kept it. She better have that hat.
I would have. Like, it's really, I want that hat. I love that hat. That is an amazing hat. It's,
I would just take it home every night. And like, where's the hat? I don't know. We need a new one. Like, I'd have like 14 of them by the end of the production. Just keep taking those hats.
Yeah, exactly. But I wonder. We should find that hat. We should find that hat, Mark.
Oh,
Let's do a John Oliver. Like, whoever can find that hat for us, we'll give you $50 and we'll donate $50 to a food bank of your choice.
There it is. Yeah. No, I'll happily do that. Oh, man. So find the hat. I should reach out to the costume designer and be like, hey, man, you want to talk the hat with me? We should get him on. Just talk about hats in cinema.
Oh, I'm in. I'm a hat person. I know a lot of people will hate me for it. I don't care. I love hats. I'm a hat person.
Wait, people would hate you for wearing hats?
Oh, no. Do you not know that there's, like, a lot of people out there in the world that cannot stand hats or people who wear hats? They hate it. Yeah. No, wow. This I've encountered, and it's very strange. I'm like, each to his own. But, wow, you're very, like, serious about it. It's a thing.
You're not in the sun. Why are you wearing a hat? And like, is that kind of what they're saying? Like,
no, they think it looks ridiculous. Like, why do you wear a hat?
Wow.
Why do you wear a hat on your head? Like, it's very weird. Like, I don't really surround myself with them.
Smart. Yeah, you don't want hat haters around.
No hat haters. Yeah, please. No.
Because that means they wouldn't like Rose the Hat. That's a good, geez Louise. Now when I watch it, that's good. I like real answers, because normally we just make up something weird, but this seems like actual logical answers, so I kind of dig that. I like that. And then one last question from Nicholas. He wrote, do you think they have they built an Overlook set, or do they use a lot of green screen and CGI paint, like the walls on? But they recreated it. They recreated the lobby just for like a couple days. Isn't that nuts?
Yep. That is insane. Like, I read... I watched an interview Flanagan did, and he said there's three Kubrick shots, only three in the whole film. And it's basically the three shots leading up to where they drive to the Overlook. So they just basically added snow and made it a bit darker, you know, those shots. The one with the lake and the island, and then the one where they're driving, you know, on the mountain road. So they just added like snow and everything. And I think they added Danny's car. And that was the only shot of Kubrick. The rest, like, it was all recreated. It was all freaking amazing.
How much would you love to be on that? Like, remember Flanagan in those videos, he was riding around that big trike, like just a big kid. And I loved it. I thought it was really interesting too. Like, you know, in The Shining, they really got into like the Steadicam, and they had the operator running behind the kid when he was riding around in his trike. In this one, they had a cart that was being pushed by a dolly grip, and then it had the cameraman just sitting. So I thought that was pretty interesting that they didn't just have a guy with a Steadicam chasing the kid riding around. Like, they had, you know, more sophisticated rigs. But I thought that was pretty neat to see how they did that. probably faster, probably more like, because this movie didn't have the biggest budget. I think it's something only around $45 million, which still kind of blows my mind, because that's not expensive.
Yeah, and to think, yeah, they built the whole set and like just all the work that went into it. But listen, that actually makes me think when you talk about the kid, like I love that in the beginning where we follow the kid, we're back in the hotel, and then the kid turns around and you're like, oh, yeah, because obviously it's not the same kid, obviously, but just to see, okay, the new actors. What did you think about his casting? I thought like, what's the chick that played Wendy? Amazing.
Oh yeah, perfect.
What's her name?
Let's see. Wait, why do I not have this? There's Jack
she
Henry.
She was so good.
Oh yeah, Alex. She yeah. Was
good. Alex.
Just looks just like her. And you know what I liked? They didn't de-age. Like that's such a weird, like what Uncanny Valley thing. I loved how they brought in like Henry Thomas to play the bartender. And how I would love to get in with this guy because Henry he was in Gerald's Game, and then he was in that house on what house?
Yes.
Hill House. And then he was in this. Like I want to get in with this Flanagan. Like keep getting roles with him. And then I thought,
I thought
Carl Lumbly as Dick Halloran, like he looked just like him, but he wasn't him. But you still get it. That's just smart. It's another smart move by this guy. How's he doing?
Yeah, I really thought it was well done. I was impressed. I liked it. I thought it worked.
And they brought back that lady from, 237? Ugh. But they kind of, she kind of became like a chump at the end, though, when Abra just goes in the bathroom like, oh, this lady, I'm going to go lock her up. Like, I loved how that woman scared so many people in 80, and now she's kind of chump change. So I kind of dug how Abra just had no problem locking that lady back up again. Oh, that was
Abra's
cool.
Abra's such a badass. It's really, really cool. But listen, I've got a question for you now.
Uh-oh.
So... because I mean, no, it's nothing like.
I know.
It's just an interesting question because Flanagan loves to like do Stephen King stuff, and I read that they're planning to do some more stuff in the future. But if they came to you, Mark, and they were like, Mark, what should we do next? Which Stephen King adaptation should we do next? What would you tell them?
That's a really good. All right. All right. So he likes to stick with kind of paranormal stuff. So all right. Let me look at Stephen King books real quick. So my first reaction, they did a TV show with Brendan Gleeson in it with Mr. Mercedes. It was like
watched a bit of it, yeah.
But the book, right? The book just punched me in the stomach. Like it just, I can't really get over it. Like it's just, I don't know. I'd like to maybe see him do that, even though they already did it on TV. I don't want to see him remake anything. Maybe do Dark Tower, right? Like remake the Dark Tower because the McConaughey Idris one didn't do too well.
Yeah, I didn't. No, I didn't even watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I watched about 30 seconds of it. I'm like, you know, Ron Howard producing. He's like, yeah, we made a mistake. Like, we didn't do too good with that. No, but you know what? Well, like Under the Dome was a TV show. I'm just going to say it. I just want to see what he could do with Mr. Mercedes on the big screen because...
Okay, cool.
Because I think he could capture the vibe. Like, the casting...
That's the thing.
Yeah, the casting was so perfect in this movie. I want to see what he could do with that. Like, I want to see it. Like, I saw that movie in my head. So, that's it. What about you? What would you have?
Yeah, no, because that's a very interesting question for me, too. But I think I'd like to see him do Salem's Lot, because I love that book, and I think he can do something really good with it. And, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing his take on Carrie.
Oh.
I personally love Carrie the book. It was the first English book that I read when I was a little girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Carrie. A good first English book. I loved it. And yeah, I didn't like the recent remakes. And I just think Flanagan knows how to do female characters really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wouldn't mind maybe a miniseries of a Carrie. Yeah.
Or The Running Man. Just have him remake that.
Maybe just like all the King stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, just keep him busy. Just keep giving him stuff.
Yeah.
Because he loves King. Like, why not? Like, let him.
Exactly.
Make him do It Chapter 2 again.
Yes.
Did you like It Chapter 2?
No.
I almost fell asleep.
No, I didn't. No. Let's not talk about it.
All right. Sounds good. The first one was good, right? We can leave. We can save that. Did you like the first one?
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one. Yeah, it wasn't as bad as some people said it. Like, I enjoyed it. But yeah, the second one. And I was so excited about the second one. Oh, no, it makes me sad. Let's go back to Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, go back to some good stuff.
The happy movie.
And how much do you want a chalkboard wall now?
Right. And it's so like that was also so beautifully, like the set was beautiful. I loved that whole room that he was in. It was really cool. I was like, oh, yeah, I could live in a room like that. That's nice.
And for only $85, that's
This
not
is a lot
bad.
of space. A lot of space. It was really, yeah. And the chalkboard wall was great.
And how bad did you feel for Violet, the little girl, in the beginning?
Yeah, shame. I think, like, you know, when you know what really happens to her, it really breaks you. But I felt like, yeah, shame. She didn't have a lot of screen time. I wonder how people that don't know the book or anything, or like, didn't know what these people do. I wonder how they felt. Did they feel anything like, or was it just like a creepy scene? Because it was creepy. Like, it was also very well done. Rose is so scary. She's so scary.
I'm gonna murder this kid, is basically, and she's totally fine with it. The one thing I laughed about, right, is when all the different people pop up. Like, that means that they're like hiding behind trees, and then like waiting to like jump out like one at a time. So it's like they're a synchronized like attack crew. And so that's the one scene that kind of annoys, because right, that's how they had to have done it, or like land the ground, because like, they
Well,
can't.
thanks, Mark. I didn't even think of it that way. And now you just ruined it because I thought that was so creepy and well done.
Like,
And you've just ruined it. Thank you so much.
they're
Thanks for
not
that.
jumpers, right? Like, they're
See, I thought they just kind of disappeared because they all got these weird like powers and whatever. So I thought like they just, like moved real quick. I don't know.
they kind of strategically shuffled to get to that spot, and like they seem to be an equal distance apart. I don't know, maybe they practice a lot. And does that mean they practice at their campground?
Yes, definitely. We should find some like it would be nice behind the scene found footage of the True Knots where they practice at camp, like how to attack. That yeah, let's yeah, a spoof movie on the True Knots back at camp.
They're like
That, yeah,
raptors
that
from
sounds
Jurassic
good.
Park.
Yeah, see, I was thinking more like that, but I mean, yeah, let's go your way because now that's ingrained into my brain.
Right? I don't know. Sorry to wreck that for you, but when I see it, I'm like, man, I don't know. That's the way,
Oh.
like from what you've read from my stuff, that's how I watch movies. So
Yeah,
that
no, but
was.
that's why I like talking to you about this because yeah, you always come with interesting angles that no, like I or other people don't necessarily think of, and it's like, yeah, no, thanks for making me think about that, Mark. Good stuff.
I really hope the next time you watch this and you see it and you're like thinking about them rolling on the ground or like hiding behind trees to like perfectly scare a child.
Oh, but yeah, shame. I mean, poor Violet. Like at that when Rose eats the flower, the
Oh
purple
yeah.
flower, when she just, but she like she doesn't eat it. She just like, oh, the way she puts it in her mouth, that whole action. I was getting goosebumps. I was like, yes, this woman. She's much.
And then
But yeah.
they took a dig at Violet later, didn't they? Like, yeah, that last girl didn't last long. It's like, jeez Louise, you guys have lost.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys have lost any like empathy that you have, just kind of referring to that little bugger. Kind of insulting her.
Absolutely discarded her. Discarded her like, oh, that was nothing. Like, and I think that also just, yeah, showed how just absolutely terrible they were. Like they really had no idea of the consequences or didn't care. Like, and it's a kid. It's a
Yeah.
kid.
Man. And you know what though? I'm still glad the baseball kid, we saw that. I think that movie needed it. Like, they showed kind of, like, if they'd have done to the baseball kid what they did to Violet, would you have taken him as seriously?
That's the thing, because they never show us what they do to Violet. So it's like, okay, they take the kids. Oh, maybe they're just keeping them somewhere, feeding them nice snacks, and I don't know. So yeah, no, they really had to show that as hard it was to watch and is still. Like I said, I don't think it's ever going to get easy to watch that scene.
Yeah. And the last thing for you, like they're kind of saying in this movie that police won't mess with them and they're really rich. Did you get that vibe from them? 'Cause I didn't really get that vibe. Like, they seemed more like
No.
They seem more like, because remember when Ewan's like, I don't think they worry about cops, or Danny said that. Like, they don't seem super rich, like, right? Like, how, what do they do for money? Do they just get money? Like, you will give me money?
But they probably use their, like, manipulation powers just to get away with it. Like, yeah. You know, I think that's just what they do. Like,
you will
they
give make me a sure, ham sandwich.
They make sure normal people like cops don't even realize what just happened, or they just forget they ever saw them, you know, that kind of thing. Because they're manipulators. So they,
that makes sense.
Yeah, they get away with it, I guess.
So then
that would be the easy way to explain it.
They're kind of lazy then, right? They just, you will give me this.
Yeah.
I know it's a random thing. I know I shouldn't be saying that about them, but. Huh.
No, but I feel like, I mean, they're not really people that are up for the challenge much. I mean, if you think when Rose, like, first realizes Abra's out there, like, she's the only one that really wants to get this girl. But then you later on you realize, yeah, it's because it's kind of a power thing as well. Because when, what's her ally? The Crow,
yeah.
Yeah?
That dude's awesome.
Because he tells her, like, no, man, I think you should leave this one because she's too big and whatever. Or maybe we should, no, he says, maybe we should not kill her, but keep her for a while. And maybe we can turn her. And she freaks out and says, turn her. Like, do you know what she would be in this group? That's a power thing because she knows Abra's more powerful than she is. So, because I read somewhere people were like, yeah, Rose is such a complex character. She just wants to look out for her family and everything. And I'm like, no, she doesn't. Like, it's such a power thing for her with Abra because Abra's more powerful than her. And she's like, bitch, no, you ain't. You know, that's what that is. So
whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that either. Yeah, she doesn't want her in the group. Why get someone more powerful if you're the leader?
Exactly.
Jeez Louise.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many things in this movie. I mean, we can go on and on and on, really.
You brought your Dr. Sleep A game. I appreciate it. This is good.
Well, yeah, I really love this movie. Thank you, Mike Flanagan. This is, yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite movies now.
Nice.
I don't think I'll ever get bored of this as well. Like, I think every time you watch it, you'll see something new. And, you know, it's just a lot. There's a lot of layers to it. And it's really emotional. I mean, I don't know how you can watch this movie and not feel anything.
No, you're right. No, it gets me. I was watching it when she makes that speech about taking, like, I don't know. You know, you're right. I get the feels. Like, when she's talking about how he took down empires and killed gladiators, it made me so happy. Like, I don't know. And then Danny. So cool. Like, what a great speech that she made.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was also so cool, the juxtaposition, like, her speech with him, and then how Danny spoke to the old people that was dying in the hospice, and he was talking about the good times you had with your, you know, loved ones, and then she's like, the empires you took down.
Yeah. They cowered before you.
It's like, yeah, what's like the meaning of life to you type of vibe, you know, and the total difference between the two factions, almost, if you will, you know, those who want to do good and empathy and those who do not, you know.
Wow.
Empires versus good memories with your kid.
Well, that was good. Any like, so I know you just kind of got some final thoughts, but any final thought before we get out of here, like, how would you we know you'd recommend the movie, but like, I don't know. Final, anything that we haven't covered that you want to touch on real quick?
Everyone should watch every Flanagan movie, really. Yeah, I just, final thoughts. You've thrown me, you know. Yeah, no, watch Mike Flanagan movies and support his stuff because it's great. I also love, the ghost stuff that he does. I mean, ghost movies is also like, it's something that I don't think everyone really gets. Like, you know, 100% right. And it's tricky. I get why, because it's tricky. Like, what are ghosts, you know? And I think, like, for so long, I was kind of not having a disconnect with how pop culture and people in general related. Like, ghosts are always these malignant poltergeist type of. But whereas really, it's a very deep psychological projection, really, the idea of ghosts and haunting. And I think that's what I really appreciate of Mike Flanagan, is because so many of his stuff deals with childhood trauma. I mean, Oculus, Dr. Sleep, yeah. Hill House, even Gerald's Game, Before I Wake with the Canker Man, like so many, like he goes for the childhood trauma. And what's more haunting than childhood trauma? So, yeah, I like his stuff.
All right.
That's my take on it.
And somebody send her Absentia. So just to get you a copy,
Please.
to get you a copy of that movie.
Please. Oh, because apparently that's great. Apparently it's a great little movie.
I mean, yeah, it's good. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably put it ahead of Before I Wake. I don't want to give anything away from you. It's good. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. All right,
Okay.
cool.
Okay.
Well, this was fun. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Zanandi Boetas? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
This is Movies from the Flicks. We'll see you next week.